Welcome to Top of the Game with Javier Sade, where we talk to amazing people that are shaping the world. These lightning round talks explore what makes remarkable leaders tick. Thinkers and doers, pushing humankind forward and at the top of their game. Impactful insights, global perspectives, valuable wisdom you can use every day in your life and work. This is Top of the Game. Enjoy today's episode. Here's Javier.
José Minaya is CEO of Nuveen, a leading global asset management firm with more than $1 trillion under management. He chairs Nuveen's executive committee and is a member of the parent company's TIA executive committee. He also serves as executive sponsor of the Inclusion and Diversity Initiative at TIA. He previously served as president and CIO of Nuveen and joined TIA in 2004 with investment experience with firms that include AIG, Merrill Lynch, and JP Morgan. He also serves on the board of trustees of Manhattan College and in the board of advisors of Amherst Tuck Business School at Dartmouth. In addition, he serves on multiple company and charitable organizational boards, including Moody's, the National Forest Foundation, the Board of Regents of the Smithsonian, and the Robert Toigo Foundation. Enjoy this conversation. José, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Javier.
It's a pleasure to have you, and I really appreciate you taking the time. You run quite a bit of money at Nuveen, but before we get to the incredible role you have now, I'd like to start in the kind of the early life of guests, because those influences are usually seminal moments that kind of develop these reflexes and experiences that set you on a path. I know you grew up in Washington Heights in Manhattan. I'm not going to talk about Lin-Manuel and the play, but tell me a little bit about growing up there and then just things that happened either early in your childhood or when you went to college. Eventually, I know you went to Tuck for business school, that were kind of inflection points that you take to this day.
Yeah, you know, for me, where I come from, you know, being a first generation American, it means a lot to me, but it was also a massive influence in my life, right? I always start out by saying, look, I grew up in a bubble, right? If you think about Washington Heights and Inwood area that I grew up in, it's like a Chinatown, right? For Dominicans, really.
Yep.
And because of that, I grew up in a bubble, strong community. Everyone around me had a similar background. Everyone spoke Spanish, home lives were the same, incredible loving community. I had a loving home, I had a strong community, I got work ethic from it, I got strong values, but it was a bubble. And there were times where I'd go downtown with my parents to go to Macy's or something. That always felt like I was in another universe, in another world, but it intrigued me. So what it really led, I took the values from that community, but when I left that community, it was a world of constant exploration, curiosity. So for me, every step I took was one of, how do I ask more questions? How do I find someone who's shining a little bit of light on me? And every step of the way, that's what it was. For me, it was, I'm in a room, I'm trying to find out what this room is about. I'm trying to find out what are the things you're supposed to do. You know, I went to college as an engineer, because I was like, well, I think you're a doctor, lawyer, engineer. I didn't know what else there was. But I got to college and I learned about a lot of things. And then it was Wall Street. And it's like, okay, all I knew about Wall Street was the movie Wall Street, which is not really a good, it's not really a good example to go in.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of missteps and I looked like a fool often, but that perseverance of what I took from my community, keep adelante, adelante, keep pushing and asking questions and being humble, I think is kind of what really helped drive me early on.
Amazing story. And you and I share a bunch of things. I grew up in an island as well. I mean, you grew up in a very populated island, Manhattan. I grew up in Puerto Rico, and that, and you are an island within an island. And because of that, it kind of forces you to reach out, learn, and have the tenacity and brave, and be brave enough to kind of get punched in the face whenever you misstep or, you know, all the things that happen as we develop as humans and kind of open up the aperture. So now you lead a mass, I'm going to skip a bunch of stuff. Your bio is going to be on the show notes for the people listening to the show. You now run a important financial institution with 125-year history. And I don't want to get into the guts of the investment business. We're going to talk about that in a second. I want you to talk to me about leading people.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, while I my firm and while my time here, we've done some amazing things. I always say the only thing I pat myself on the back for is people and the people that you're able to surround yourself with. And for me, what leadership, where you start with leadership is understanding you have to earn people's trust. You know, this idea that you're going to walk in a room and inspire people overnight or right away. You could try to, that inspiration may work for you for a week or a month or two, but ultimately for me, the best leaders out there, they earn your trust. You're there. The best leaders out there have tremendous empathy, right? Because to lead someone, you first have to understand what makes him or her tick. You have to understand what makes him or her get motivated or not. What are their weaknesses and strengths? Sure. But really, as human beings, what makes them go? And I think the best leaders out there, that's how they lead. They lead by earning the trust of their people and letting things happen organically, which is a big thing I always say. I kind of come in and you try to be quiet in the room at times because you want to hear other people's ideas. You want to hold people accountable, but you want to empower them as well. And that to me is not just a strong functioning team, but again, the best leaders, they earn their people's trust and they have tremendous empathy.
We both have Latino moms, you Dominican, me Puerto Rican. And I know they use this phrase, which is God gave you 2 ears and a mouth for a reason. So let's talk about a little bit about the intersection of capital, investments, capitalism. It's evolved over our lifetime. I know it's evolved since Adam Smith, but over our lifetime, there's been all kinds of things, democratization of the capital markets. There's a pull and push between active investing and passive investing. There's all kinds of trends that are secular, large, for the most part, good. I want to get your sense at a very high level, and I know you're not speaking necessarily on behalf of Nuveen. I think the listeners would benefit from your perspective being at the front lines of this.
Sure. And I would say, capitalism has many faults, but again, in my opinion, it's still the best system out there and it's the best mm-hmm. system to help individuals grow wealth. So you start with that, but it has many faults. And I don't think the philosophy around capitalism has evolved changed much since the days of Adam Smith. What has changed is the world around us, right? And what we've seen is technology has changed capitalism, right? Because of the flow of information, the ability of getting individuals, capital to individuals has changed. I think the other thing that has changed is demographics and globalization, right? So today, if you think about it, and this kind of ties back to passive investing, by the way, which is a necessity in our capital markets. Why? Mm-hmm. Because if you go back 50, 60 years, you have way more individuals investing in markets today. You may have someone working a cafeteria line as well as a doctor just through their 401ks. Mm-hmm. So that has kind of changed a massive dynamic. And I think the most recent dynamic, I think, is one, again, when you think about passive and active and then within active alternatives, mm-hmm. it's this idea of, passive is always, that trend isn't going to change because it is the most efficient way to get an individual invested in the market. Mm-hmm. Yet what we do know now is that volatility is higher. 70-30 portfolios, all index when correlations go to one, is just going to make the retirement crisis we have in this country even worse. So now you're seeing the next level of innovation driving to what are the ability of getting these types of different investments in other pockets of the capital markets into the everyday person's portfolio.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, and it's hard to argue with the raw force of a passive ETF that costs 5 bips, right? That's a cost that's hard to beat. But at the same time, to your point, this last 12 months, 7 of the largest 500 stocks in the United States have driven 70% of the gains, which I don't want to get too much into the guts of it, but you talked a little bit about the future, which is kind of the last part of this discussion. Not only the future of capitalism and investing and the productive use of capital and whatever you want to talk about in terms of what fuels economies,
Yeah, I will tell you, I'm extremely optimistic about the future of our world, our planet, our own country here, the capital markets. You know, two things I say. One, look, you can't fear change and you can't fear progress, right? If you think about AI is a big topic that's thrown out there, and what's it going to do to the job forces? And of course, it'll have an impact in the labor force. My favorite tagline is the individuals using AI are going to be better than the individuals not using it. And there'll be disruption, as there always is, but progress is good. Progress is good because it drives, you know, more efficiencies, and that's largely good for the broader community. And then there's an adjustment period. I think even the information, again, there's a lot of issues that it's causing. We're very polarized as a country, but you know what? We are having conversations today that were not had in public before. Mm-hmm. That is a positive. It looks bad earlier on, the initial reactions, the polarization, but you know what? The information is out there. The conversations are happening. And I do think as a society, we will adjust yet again, like we did in the 60s and even previous eras before that. I am optimistic about that. And then in our own capital markets, I'm optimistic because of the innovation we're seeing. Again, I go back to what is a standard portfolio? Who's invested in capital markets? That cohort is going to grow larger. And now you're seeing things like, how do we go back to a defined benefit process? You know, secured guaranteed income. My parent company is a big guaranteed income provider. That is a big discussion today. So that means your portfolios are going to be more stable going forward as well, in my opinion. So what you have, and you're right, there's a lot to unpack here. Tremendous disruption, tremendous feelings of you're going to be uncomfortable. But I do believe this is how progress works.
I agree with you. I think in Washington, they call it in the legislative branch, making sausages ugly, meaning making laws and policy. And that's messy, right? Information is divergent. And, you know, as a leader, you have to deal with all these things real time because you have, you know, 15 different stakeholders pulling you in different directions. And at the end, you got to have some conviction. Jose, I'm going to close with a very mundane question just because we share provenance from two islands that are next to each other. Are you a better salsa or merengue dancer? Or you don't tell me you don't dance.
Well, I have 72 first cousins. I have a very big family, and as a Dominican man, are not allowed not to dance. That was one thing. You know, the body is machismo. You wouldn't think dancing, but it's like, hey, you play baseball and you dance when you're Dominican. And of course, I think you absolutely know the answer to this, which is merengue is what I grew up with. It's very vivid memories of all the family parties. Going to, and it was always the, you know, other people weren't allowed to dance with your cousins or your sibling or your sister. So, you know, you were the ones that had to step up and dance with your female cousins because they weren't allowed to dance with people outside of the family. So
our families are very protective, and it doesn't surprise me you chose merengue. Jose, it's a real pleasure to have you. The world is lucky to have you. Your company is lucky to have you. Thank you for everything you do. We appreciate you being a guest in the show.
Yeah, please keep doing what you do as well, Javier.
We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. For information and links about today's guests, check out the show notes and visit topofthegame-thepod.com. Your host, Javier Sade, the show Top of the Game. Thanks for listening.